Accession number 19935, Reel 2.
Jim Wilkes, Reel 2.
Right. Well, the jungle training, as I say, was supposed to be 6 weeks. And you were going through dense jungle in single file, and every so often, something obviously automatic or controlled somewhere, dressed as a Jap, would spring up and fire at you. And so you had to be, the idea was for you to be that quick and alert to beat the enemy to the punch, you see. And it consisted of that mainly, going through the jungle, all these, and booby traps, of course. There were some booby traps set off. You had to be careful of that. But the main thing was something springing up all of a sudden out of the jungle, in front of you, behind you, what you're missing. It kept you awake, like, you know. That's what it was basically about, like, you know.
So there were all these obstacles set up in the jungle?
Yes, but you couldn't see them till they were sprung. Or whatever, they're setting them off, you see. That was the whole idea, I suppose, like, you know.
Do you think it was useful?
Pardon?
Do you think it was useful?
Oh, yeah, definitely, like. Oh, yes, it was useful, like. Although, well, I suppose it was useful, like. Can't tell nowadays, to be honest. Because at one time, we were in the middle of some jungle grass which was 8-9 foot tall. Well, no way could anybody spring up out of that. It was that, you know. I suppose it was useful.
And your next recollection, please.
Well, from there we went to I believe we went to Calcutta, to a transit camp there. From Calcutta, we caught the train, and I believe we were on that train 4 or 5 days, night and day, to a place called Dimapur, which was the last rail head before we got into Burma. We got off the train at Dimapur, and from Dimapur then, we was on then what's well known now as the Imphal Koyma Road. And from Dimapur, I went with others to join my unit, 2nd Battalion West Yorks. And we joined the battalion up there about a week before the Japs surrounded us and cut us off, like. And at the same time, they surrounded and cut off Koyma.
Whereabouts were you surrounded? Whereabouts did you join the battalion?
It was up a big hill. But it was in action. I can't remember if it had a name. All I can remember is when we got to the battalion, myself and one or two more said, right, you're joining B Company, you're joining C, D, whatever. Found company headquarters, right, you're joining 11th platoon. Go report to the sergeant of 11th platoon. So he was called Sergeant Johnson, I remember his name. And by now it was getting dusk. So I reported to Sergeant Johnson. He said, right, you're in so-and-so section, Lance Corporal Taylor. I'll take you to them. Well, they were all dug in the slit trenches, because, as I say, it was coming dusk, and at dusk, everybody stands still in case there's an attack. So I reported to Lance Corporal Taylor. He said, well, he said, pointless you doing anything tonight. What's your name? Wilkie, he said. He said, for tonight, he said, you bed down and leave the rest of it. So the first night I was there, I didn't do anything. Then, of course, the following morning, got to meet the rest of the lads of the section and rest of the lads of the platoon. And from there on, that was it. We was in. But I found out after that we joined the West Yorks that particular day. I can't remember what day. As I say, some went to company, some went to another. I found out a day or two after that some that had already joined the battalion when we had already been killed within a day or two. So I suppose I was lucky.
What job were you given in the unit?
I was, at that time, I don't know where it came from, but I got a Tommy gun, or a Thompson submachine gun. They gave me that flipping thing. If we were at full strength, there were about 11 men in the section, and his riflemen. I had this Thompson, then you had the Bren gunner, and his second in command. So basically, you had about 7 or 8 riflemen. I had this submachine gun. You had your Bren gunner and his second in command. And in the platoon, you had 3 sections to a platoon headquarters, and in platoon headquarters, you had a 2-inch mortar man and his second in command. So basically, you had about 40 odd men to a platoon, if you were at full strength, which wasn't very often. So there we are. From there we sallied off all the way into Burma.
What impression did your new unit make on you? Did the men in the new unit make on you?
Oh, there's no problem there, because we were all, a lot of them, as I say, were from Yorkshire, Leeds, Bradford. Full enough, we'd one of some Scotch fellas with some Geordies, but we were all in the same boat, so it didn't make any difference, everybody. There was no argy-bargy, no falling out. We were all in the same, so that was it. You know. We all tried to look after one another, you know.
What is the next thing that you remember?
Well, the next thing, obviously, we went into one or two attacks, like, and defence, and one thing and another, like. But eventually, we, on the Infalcoima Road, we broke out, not just our battalion, but others, we broke out of Infal, and at the same time, the garrison at Coima broke out of Coima. We're miles and miles apart, I don't know how many miles apart, and the idea was to join up, so everybody was advancing down the Coima Road from one end or the other end. But you've got to bear in mind that each side of the Coima Road was jungle and massive hills, cuds as we called them, and the Japs were dug in at each side more or less, and at every 400 or 500 yards there was a roadblock, which simply was the Japs that felled massive trees that fallen across the road and blocked the road, you see. So every so often you're stuck with a roadblock and you've got to either go around it or try to go through it. Well, of course, we had no tanks or anything like that. And one sad episode there was, which is well known in the West Yorks, we got to this roadblock on the Infalcoima Road, and our Colonel Cree, we couldn't get past this roadblock. Japs were dug in at both sides. So this particular day, Colonel Cree sent D Company round the left of the roadblock to go right round it and come to the round to in the rear of the Japs. B Company, which was me, our company, we went round the right-hand side of the roadblock to come round back of the Japs that way. Now, D Company, unfortunately, very unfortunately, they didn't go far enough before they cut in to go round the back of the Japs, and they ran smack into the Japs and lost 26 men.
What do you remember about going round the right-hand side?
We were lucky. We didn't see any. Our side, they must have scarpered. But D Company ran smack into this lot. And out of the, they lost 26 men.
Had you any inkling of what was happening?
Well, we heard, obviously we heard what was going on, right? But we were there again. This is where luck comes into it. We didn't hit. We didn't find anybody. Our Japs must have gone somewhere. But anyway, the following, the same day, the I have his letter somewhere, Brigadier Craig, I don't know what I'm doing with it. He sort of blamed himself. Out of these 26, all the officers got killed. Majors, captains, they all got killed. The next day, the same day or the next day, they plastered it with the artillery and then went in, like. But of course, by then the Japs had backed off again, they'd retreated again. And that's when we found all these 26 men. And that's where we buried them.
So you were in the burial party?
Yeah.
So had you done much fighting yourself with the Japanese by then?
Oh yeah, a bit, yes. Well, you were in the thick of it, like.
What was the countryside like round here?
Well, as I said, it was all jungle, you know.
Did the bodies of the men who were lost from D Company stay there, where you'd buried them?
No, later on, it must have been 3 or 4 months after, my company commander, which was Major Dunlop at the time, sent for me. He says, Wilkes, he says, there's you and 4 or 5 more. You're going back to where D Company was hit with the battalion Padre. He's going back with you. And you're going to dig them, get them all up. Identify as many as you can. All of them, if you can. He says, and that's your job for the next 4 or 5 days with the battalion Padre. So I believe there was about 6 of us. We went back, found the place easy enough, like. And started digging them up. And what we had to put them in was parachutes. As I said, we were supplied by air, so there were plenty of parachutes. So we took this load of parachutes with them, and as we found them and dug them up, tried to identify them, I believe we managed to identify 22 out of the 26. One. He had a box of matches in his pocket with his number written on, thing like that. One or two had the identity disc on, not many. But anyway, eventually we found all 26. And as I say, I believe we identified 22. But the surprising thing was, 4 of them had all been buried in one slip trench, one on top of the other. So you can imagine that when we uncovered them, there was a bit of a smell. And I don't know if I'm hard-hearted or what, but they were all walking around with masks on, and I just turned around and said, what the hell's up with you? They can't harm you. They can't hurt you. Anyway, these 4, that was all one on top of the other, when we got the bottom man out, you could recognise him. He's got his fingernails on, ginger hair. He'd been that well preserved. I didn't personally know him, but if I had known him, I could have said, that's so and so, you see. That was a bit of a rotten job, like, but at least they'll all be in a military sympathy, you know,
Military cemetery in Burma?
I would imagine there'll be a Imphal. There's a military cemetery in Imphal. Or Coima, I believe there's one at Coima as well. So from there, eventually we... after I came back from that burial party, well, not burial party, that party, I was sent for again, and I thought, what have I done wrong? I said, oh, Wilkes, he says, you're one of the lucky ones. He said, there'd been a draw. You're one of the lucky ones, a bit of leave. He said, you go to New Delhi, you own so and so, so and so, so and so. So I went to New Delhi. And this is a funny story. We stayed in the Viceroy's Palace. We sat and talked with the Viceroy, who at that time was Field Marshal Wavell, who at one time was, of course, in the desert. He drove the Italians back, if I remember rightly. We sat chatting to him, had a right good time. Anyway, we'd been there a day or two, and we all decided to go to down into New Delhi to go to the picture house. So we went down into New Delhi to the picture house, which was upstairs in a place called Connaught Circle. Remember that name? And we went upstairs, and unfortunately, the cinema was full. Now, silly as it may seem, I believe I was 19 years old then. I didn't drink. So we all went to the bar, and we were drinking whiskey. Consequently, when we came back down the stairs, the last thing I can remember is going up to this young woman, and to be blunt, I suppose, chatting her up. And I can remember a red cap coming over and saying to her, is he bothering you, miss? And she said, no, no, he's all right. And that's the last thing I remember till I woke up next morning, asleep next to a horse in some stables. How the hell I got there, I do not know to this day. I was only 19, but I had false teeth. My teeth were broken. My identity disks were missing. My money was missing. My paybook was missing. I was in a hell of a mess. So anyway, eventually I found me. I didn't know where I was, but eventually I found my way back to the Viceroy's Palace, crawled into bed. Next day, I said, you better send for a doctor. I've got malaria again. So finished up in hospital in New Delhi. Came out of New Delhi, out of hospital. By that time, the lads that had come on leave had rejoined the unit. I came out of hospital in New Delhi. Had to go to Calcutta, transit camp, all that way to Calcutta again. Transit camp in Calcutta. I'd been there a week. I went down with malaria again. So I went into hospital there. And it was a woman doctor, a Scotch woman. And she says, have you had malaria before? I said, yes, this will be third time. Like. She said, when did you have it last time? I said, about a week ago. Oh, she says, I'll have a killer cure you this time. And she was pumping quinine down me, mixed with iron tonic. And it was that vile, I couldn't keep it down. Every time I swallowed it, I threw it back. And she came to me one day, she said, look, she says, if you don't keep that down, she says, I'm going to stick it in your arse and you'll get it that way. So what she did, she brought me a bag of boiled sweets. She said, as soon as you get it down, she said, you stick one of them in your mouth. Which I did, and I managed to keep it down. But she was right, I never got malaria again.
My God. But you weren't bringing it up deliberately, were you?
Oh, no. No, I just couldn't keep it there. Have you ever had quinine?
Oh. No.
Quinine and tonic water, iron tonic water. What a bad mixture.
But coming back to that incident in New Delhi, what do you think had happened to you?
Well, I found out after, fully enough, I came back and worked at Saltair down here, down in finishing. And there was a lad there called Henry Willoughby. And we got talking. He says, oh, he says, I was in the Coilies. I says, well, where were you? He said, well, he said, we came out of Burma, he says, and got chased out of Burma. He says, well, we were in New Delhi. I said, oh, I says, I had a bit of time in New Delhi on leave, and I tell him what had happened. Oh, he says, I remember that, he says. It wasn't me, he said, but you got argued with one at college, he said, and he pumped you once. So that's the only thing I found out about it. And he said then, I was laid there, according to Henry, and an army truck pulled up, and somebody piled onto this army truck, and they drove off. So I still don't know to this day how I finish up sleeping with a horse. I don't.
So who do you think took your money?
Well, that could be anybody. It could have been as my own mates. Although I can't see them taking my pay book and my identity because they were no good to them, were they? But as I say, my teeth were broken. I had to get them mended.
Did you recover quickly?
I didn't. What, for malaria? I didn't do too bad. No, she cured me all right. Did that doctor? Then I rejoined my unit.
Before you rejoined your unit, what did you think of Wavell?
Oh, he's a nice fella. Was Wavell? Yeah, very nice. I was sat next to him, talking to him. Yeah, very nice fella. Chatting, how are you boys getting on up there, like, what do you think of this, that and the other, you know. He had, if I remember rightly, I don't know if he had an affliction or not, but he seemed to have one eye closed a little bit. Am I right there?
I think so.
Yeah.
What did you talk about with him?
Oh, the conditions and the Japs and the food and we used to get some biscuit, what we used to call art tack, big square biscuits, like dog biscuits. And you needed hammer to break them. What we used to joke about them, you used to eat them in the dark so you didn't see the weevils. And corned beef, you didn't get corned beef out of a tin with a knife, you poured it out.
Did you tell Wavell all this?
Oh, yes.
How did you get on with the Indian civilians in New Delhi and other places?
Well, as I said, on being there a day or two, I didn't get much chance to talk to civilians because, as I said, I finished up in hospital. I'm from hospital in a transit camp.
Did you ever run into any problems with Indian civilians at any time?
No. Never, no. That time I was in Calcutta, fully enough, in the transit camp, I went down Chowringhee for a walk. There again I was going to go to the pictures. And I'm walking down Chowringhee and all of a sudden this blasted dog dashed out from a side alley and bit me in the leg. So I had to go straight back to the transit camp and get a tech jab. So that was enough. Bit of experience from Calcutta, was that?
How did the Indians behave towards you?
Oh, they were right. Peak eye sab, they were right. No problem at all. Well, you see, we was in the Indian Army. The 14th Army was the Indian Army. And each division had three brigades, and each brigade had three battalions. But in each brigade, there was only one British battalion. So your other two battalions were Indians, Sikhs, Punjabi, all sorts, you know. So you had to get on together. There's no problem there at all.
What did you think of the Indian troops?
Oh, they were good, very good. Yeah. Oh, no problem. We've only got to look at the VCs they've got.
So what happened to you after you got cured of malaria?
Well, I rejoined my unit. And then we started going up the Tidham Road, what they call the Tidham Road, towards Tidham, and that was a road that was literally winding all the way around up the hill, winding cut really out from the hill sides. And at that time, there was a bit of transport going round, but if they weren't very careful, and they got to near the edge, and they went down the side, which happened more than once, especially if there'd been some heavy rain. So I went, eventually we got to Tidham. From Tidham, Did we get the Fort White first? You forget which come first. I think we got the Tidham, then Fort White. And then we went up Kennedy, a place called Kennedy Peak. All these hills, they all had names as an objective. And Kennedy Peak, there were no Japs there at the time, but we went up it to occupy it, take over some Indian troops. And you should have seen the bunker at the top of Kennedy Peak. They wanted a 6-inch gun to shift it. Fantastic bunkers. Dug deep in, tree trunks all over the top, and then about 6 feet of earth on top of that. The only way you could have got them out of them was a flamethrower. Fantastic bunkers. I'm glad we didn't have to take it. Anyway, from there went up what they call a chocolate staircase. It was called that because as they cut the earth out, it was light, dark brown. Fort White. From Fort White, we went down to the crossover. I believe it was the Manipo River. Yes, cross over the Manipo. That was where the bridge was blown down, and the dead elephant in the water, caught in the wreckage. If I remember that, I went across that river on a kind of pontoon, pulled across from the other side by ropes, if I remember rightly. I may have got, you know, I'm in the wrong order, because later on we crossed the Chindwin, went over the Chindwin, went over the Irrawaddy, but in which order now, I forget now, but eventually we got to one place, I forget where it was, and they decided to fly our battalion in to a place called Mektila, which is more or less in the middle of Burma. Which some troops had been were there, but they were still under Jap fire, and so they decided to fly our battalion in Dakotas onto this airstrip at Mektila. The snag was, as we were landing, the Japs were shelling the airstrip, and so the American air crew said, "Look, we're not stopping. We're landing on the airstrip. We taxi along the airstrip. And as we're taxiing along, you lot jump out. And as soon as you lot have jumped out, we're taking off at the other end." And this is what happened. The plane landed on the airstrip, taxied, and took off. So you can imagine a bit of a shambles jumping out of an aeroplane. The men, packs, all sorts, all over the damn airstrip. But as far as I know, nobody got badly hurt, like, you know. And so, when we got sorted out, we went into what we called a defensive box, which was one of the, which I think I was about the first time I'd seen barbed wire. And we were in this box. Japs were shelling the airstrip and shelling us. Then it quietened down. But our job then, which was one of the, I've been frightened many times, but one of the few times where I've been frightened a lot more, in the morning, we had to go out and clear that airstrip before the next lot of planes could land. Well, the Japs were at either side of the jungle, at each side of the airstrip, of course. The Japs were up in the trees, sniping us as we were trying to clear the airstrip. And you never know who's going to get it next. But that was our job for about 8 or 9.